It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Geek culture is big right now. Science fiction, superheroes, comic books. This hour, we're going to talk about so-called geek culture in Iowa. And of course, when anything gets this popular, it's also big business. 130,000 people attend Comic-Con International in San Diego every July, and there are many smaller conventions around the country. This weekend, Wizard World, which is a traveling Comic-Con, is coming to Des Moines. I'll talk with the CEO of Wizard World a little later on, but first, some geeks with unimpeachable credentials. Phil Hester is here. He's a comic book artist and writer who lives in North English, Iowa. Hello, Phil.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and you're going to actually be at Wizard World this weekend. Right?
Mm-hmm. I'll have an artist alley table there, which means people can come up and request for me to do little drawings or sign their books or just talk.
Awesome. And actually, everybody who goes to Wizard World will have a little piece of your art
well,
right?
There's a convention exclusive issue of The Walking Dead that has like a cover that you can only get in Des Moines. And I happen to draw that one. So, yeah.
Nice.
The only way you're going to get it is to come to the show this weekend.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about Comic-Cons and, of course, your work in a moment. Aaron Krull is also with us. He is the co-owner of OC Games and Comics in Orange City, Iowa. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
And Kyle Moody is on the line. He's an assistant professor of communications at Fitchburg State University in Massachusetts. He also got his PhD at the University of Iowa. Hello, Kyle.
Hi, pleased to be here with you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being here today. And I want to start with this notion that this kind of culture is having a moment, because there is no question that it's big business, that especially these Comic-Cons, these conventions are exploding all over the place. I mean, do we see, and Kyle, I'll let you start, a subculture that's becoming really mainstream?
Absolutely. I'm coming at it from a different perspective, from the academic angle. But every year I go to the Popular Culture Association, and discussions of cosplay, of comic culture, of comic book films as a subject of research, they always get discussed at this conference. And it's a fascinating area that's really enthralled academics. So you can bet that that academic life has also enthralled mainstream audiences, too.
Interesting. Well, and Aaron, I mean, you have a comic book shop in Orange City, Iowa, which sounds somewhat unlikely, actually. I mean, is that made possible because of this explosion?
It really has. We're about a town of 5,000 to 6,000 people, and we do have Northwestern College up here. And there's always been the so-called closet geeks where, you know, they secretly go to comic book stores, get their collections, and then run out the door as fast as they can and go home and read them. But now with the emergence of all these superhero movies and, you know, all these franchises coming to life on the big screen, a lot of not only kids but adults that used to read those comic books now actually can talk openly in public and, you know, enjoy their love of comic books with people who probably never even picked up a comic book but know the movies and, you know, like to hear about all of the other alternate storylines and this and that. It's really made for an actual business in this small town, Orange City, that is actually doing quite well.
Well, congratulations on that. I find it interesting that with so many bookstores all over the country really suffering as people buy more and more of their books online, the comic book shop seems to have a niche in life that can't be replaced by the internet. Why do you think that is?
Well, a lot of the guys in the store, they say it's a simple fact of I love turning pages. It's a collector's item first and foremost. A lot of people just love to have the physical comic book in their hand. It's kind of also a subculture of the friendly local gaming store. You know, they want to help out their store, and they know that by purchasing their comic books through them, it really allows them to, you know, keep their not only pull orders of comic books coming in, but to share that with other people. You know, instead of going, oh, go to this website, it's like, hey, let's go to the comic book store. You know, conveniently today is New Comic Book Day, so we're going to have a bunch of people in here, and we usually get one or two new people that browse and eventually pick up a copy and end up reading it and coming back the next day saying, please order me the next 6 month issues. So,
well, and it's more than just reading comic books, too. I mean, what do you do to help kind of foster that community and connect people who want to play games together and things like that?
Well, we're just starting our summer leagues for games. And for comic books, we do special pull orders. So if you're interested in a comic book, we will order you when we have a little file folder back here. So no matter what, you know, you can come in that next week when it comes in. Or we have a couple college students that, you know, they're gone for the summer. When they come back, they're really looking forward to their, you know, 10, 12, 50 comic books that we're going to save for them, and they're just going to binge read for the first week of college. So we try to do everything we possibly can to accommodate people who, first of all, don't know comic books, also love comic books and have been collecting for years. It's really fun to watch somebody who's been collecting for years and then somebody who's never even read a comic book sit there at the store and talk, you know, 2 hours on their favorite comic book characters.
Interesting. Well, and you mentioned your summer game league. What kind of games are we talking about?
We do Magic the Gathering, which is a staple for any game store. It's such a huge game nowadays with the pro tours and just the level of interest in Magic the Gathering. But we also do Dice Masters, which is a new game that came out, which focuses mainly around comic book characters. Marvel and DC have both come out with expansions. And then we also do the Star Wars X-Wing, which is a miniatures game with all the starships from X-Wing, or from Star Wars. And the new movies coming out has really bumped that one up. They're going to start releasing new ships from the movies after the movie's out. So,
and what kind of age range do you see getting involved in the gameplay?
Oh, boy, we have, I had a 5-year-old the other day, and I had an 82-year-old the other day, so.
Wow.
We cover just about everyone. Some people who are just looking for a hobby, and some people who are looking to just kind of fill the void of, you know, those hot summer days or the rain days kind of thing. I get quite a few parents that drop their kids off and say, teach them a game, and then, you know, it's. I don't want to say we're a babysitter, but...
yeah, you don't want to put that shingle out there. Changes your insurance, all of that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, Phil, let me ask you, because you've been in this business a long time.
Yes.
So have you seen this kind of level of interest before? Is this cyclical?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are certain hot periods and lulls, and there's a great old comic book artist by the name of Joe Kubert, who's passed away now, who's famously said, I've been through the death of comics 6 times. Yeah, we always have our ups and downs. I've been a consumer of comic books for about 40 years, and I've been a producer for about 30 years. So I've seen that whole change from, you know, I started reading comics. It was still something you could get teased for. It was kind of a nerd thing. And then in like the 80s and 90s, it developed this kind of, like we had this kind of sheen of punk culture about us.
Because
it was like, sort of like this DIY indie scene that blew up at that time. And it sort of became this, I don't want to say dangerous because it's comic books, but it, you know, we became this like I said, kind of like punk or hip hop. We became this weird alternative to the mainstream. And that sort of made comics cool. And that sort of slowly seeped into the mainstream comic book culture. And then that became part of the movie culture and everything else. So yeah, it's been kind of, like we were talking before the show, it's like when you watch your favorite band go from like a little struggling band playing clubs and you're the only person buying the CDs off the table, you know, and then watching them blow up and play huge arenas and sell out gigantic international tours. And you sort of, there's this like sort of, I lost possession of my favorite band, but it's still cool to see everybody else enjoying them. So yeah, it's sort of that wistful exuberance for me.
Well, and can you, having seen this cycle a couple of times, do you have an idea what seems to drive it? Is it Hollywood?
Yeah. I think largely it's a technological issue. I mean, finally, TV and movies can keep up with what we've been doing in comics for 50 years, credibly. You know, stuff in the 70s, like if you look back at Superman 1 or Superman
right.
2, at the time, that was like...
And don't look back at Superman 3
yeah,
at all.
Avoid
ever.
That.
Right.
But, you know, that stuff, that was as good as it could look. And it was okay for the time.
Right. It blew me away as a small child.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. It inspired me.
It doesn't look real.
But now the Hulk is credible on screen. When I, even as a kid, Lou Ferrigno was not credible as the Hulk to me. It was that wig, right? But like now all this stuff that you couldn't dream, of looking real and sounding real and moving in a real way, now can do that on screen. And that has opened it up to a whole sea of people that wouldn't, be caught dead walking into a comic book store.
Right. Well, when it just – back to that sort of idea of, everybody's into your band now. Mm-hmm. When somebody like me wants to talk to you about – Superman based on,
right.
My interest in the movies, mm-hmm. even though I've never read a Superman comic book. Is there some tension there?
No, I don't think so.
Not for
I mean,
you.
just among grumps, not for me. Like Peter David, who's a great comic book writer, wrote an article probably 20 years ago that somebody could credibly say they were a Spider-Man fan or an Iron Man fan without ever picking up a comic book. Because of movies, cartoons, backpacks, video games. There are people that are Batman fans strictly from playing Arkham Asylum or strictly from seeing the Christian Bale movies. But they're still Batman fans. And, they're still, my people.
Are they your people too, Aaron, or not?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. We get a lot of that, actually. In fact, the Avengers movie came out not too long ago, and we're located right next to the movie theater. And the movie came out, and they got done seeing it. They walked into our store, and they're like, "We just watched the movie, and do you have the compromises?" I says, "Yeah, I've got two different alternate storylines, and I've got this, and I've got all kinds of different ones." So,
nice.
Yeah, it's really helped out. I definitely fell into the Captain America fandom without ever picking up a Captain America comic book. But now that I have read half a dozen of them, I can just tell you it just enhances your love for the character. And
we're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about so-called geek culture this hour. Phil Hester, comic book artist and writer, is here. Aaron Kroll, owner of OC Games and Comics in Orange City. And Kyle Moody, assistant professor of communications at Fitchburg State. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about geek culture in Iowa. We're going to talk about cosplay or dressing up like characters to go to a convention or for other events in just a few minutes. And also, we'll get back to my conversation with Phil Hester, Aaron Kroll, and Kyle Moody. But first, Wizard World is a traveling Comic-Con that is coming to Des Moines this weekend. Many, many big name stars will be there, including the man who played one of the most, or originated at least, one of the most popular Iowa characters of all time, our future son, Starfleet Commander James T. Kirk. William Shatner will be here. And with me now is Joe Macaluso. He is the CEO, or pardon me, John Macaluso, the CEO of Wizard World. Hi, John.
Hello there. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Our pleasure.
Now, Wizard World puts on conventions all over the United States. So you have, I think, is it 28 shows planned for 2015?
It is.
All right. So give me an idea of what people can expect when they go to Wizard World.
Well, they can expect they can expect to have a great time. It's very interactive. We have hundreds of vendors. We have hundreds of artists. And we have a ton of celebrities coming. Now, you also have another Iowa son coming. Brandon Roth is coming.
Right. Who played, played Superman.
Yes. And he's now in Arrow. So we're very excited with the guest list that we have. Besides Bill Shatner, there's Robert Englund coming to the show, and Billy Dee Williams and Michael Cudlitz, and one of my good buddies Dean Cain and Giancarlo Esposito. We've got a bunch of different wrestlers coming. Besides some of the Boondock Saints and Ernie Hudson, and my friend Lou Ferrigno and Jason David Frank. So it's very, very exciting.
Now there are some people who are somewhat critical of Wizard World because they look at these sort of homegrown Comic-Cons and say that a big company taking a Comic-Con around the country and booking all these different dates isn't as authentic an experience as something that springs up from the community. What's your response to that?
Well, everyone that works for me in this company is part of that community. So we have people from our programming department, our talent team, our logistics team, geeks, nerds, all of us alike here. It's pretty homegrown inside here. We just happen to have the resources. We have the infrastructure to go out and do more than one of them.
So, and speaking of demand, I was looking at some of the figures. I see that you're totally sold out of three-day passes. We're close to being sold out of Saturday standalone passes and really are on pace to sell 25,000 tickets, which is pretty impressive. In Des Moines, how do you judge the success of a show?
Well, we first of all judge the success of a show on the fan experience. We always want to give the fan a great experience. That's first and foremost. We always want to make sure that the vendors have a good experience and that the fans are appreciative of the merchandise that they're bringing. We have so many great artists and creators that come to the shows that it's really important to us that they get noticed. Their art is fantastic. And when you see it, I hope you do come to the show and you get to see some of the great artists that are there from Neil Adams and Mike Zeck and Phil Hester. I mean, it's just an Arthur Saddam. There's so many really fantastic guys coming.
Well, and all most of the Comic-Cons have really evolved over the years to embrace a larger world of popular culture. Would you say that Wizard World is also that way?
Well, you know, we follow a lot of the lead from the entertainment industry. You know, I always laugh when I tell people that, you know, 5 years ago, The Walking Dead had a couple of 100,000 viewers. Today it has 23 million. So that means I have 22.5 million new fans. And then when you go look at the action hero movies that are coming out, they're the biggest blockbusters of the year. And then you look at the horror and the sci-fi genre. I mean, they're the ones that are driving the whole business. You look at the biggest shows on TV, you know, Agent Carter and Arrow and Flash and Daredevil. They're all stuff that hit the pop culture, you know, environment.
Why do you think that this has gotten so big now? I mean, comic books have always been around. People have always loved superheroes. But there does seem to be sort of this critical mass that's occurring at this moment in time.
Because geek is now chic.
What are you most excited about this weekend?
I'm excited. Listen, I really get excited to see the fans have a great time. And when you see people that can't speak after they meet Bill or can't speak after they meet Dean because they have tattoos on their body of their faces and stuff like that, it's really very, very heartwarming.
John, thank you so much for talking with us today.
It is my pleasure, and thank you, and come out to the show.
John Macaluso is the CEO of Wizard World. Wizard World is coming to Des Moines this weekend. This hour, we're talking about geek culture in Iowa. Phil Hester is here, comic book artist and writer who lives in North English. Aaron Krull is the co-owner of OC Games and Comics in Orange City. Kyle Moody is an assistant professor of communications at Fitchburg State University in Massachusetts. He got his PhD at the University of Iowa. We'd also love to hear your comments as well. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kyle, as we've seen this kind of gathering grow over the years, I mean, Bill Shatner is going to be at Wizard World. That makes me think about the Trek conventions that were really kind of the precursors of these giant Comic-Cons, right?
Absolutely. An academic, Henry Jenkins, actually talked about how Star Trek fans would come to conventions as a way to meet and discuss not only their love of the show, but also how they as a community have grown and would continue to grow, much like people would go to comic shops to talk about their love of certain comics or just even to grow together as a community of fans. So this has just been an ongoing evolution of geek culture as it moves forward.
Well, and I was, you know, asking Aaron earlier about why comic book stores seem to still have this place in our culture, whereas so many other gathering places have been replaced by the internet. I mean, people spend a lot of time on the internet sharing their feelings about comic books or Star Trek or, you know, writing fan fiction, really engaging in these worlds. Why is the face-to-face such a valuable experience, do you think, Kyle?
I absolutely think it's a valuable experience because it's a safe space. It's a place where you can immediately recognize fans and fellow lovers of media. It's the reason why my work deals largely with video games, so whenever I go to independent game stores and talk to them, I love that face-to-face interaction because I don't always get that from the internet. I don't think a lot of fans want people to randomly Skype into them saying, hey, let's talk about this week's Daredevil. It's instead something where you have that shared, centrally located space where you can go in and discuss things. And it's almost always a very positive experience for everybody involved.
Well, and Phil, you've been involved in these conventions for a long time.
Yeah.
as you've watched the evolution, how has it changed?
Oh, well, when I started, you didn't have to pay to meet Stan Lee. You know, you were when I was breaking in as a young artist, you know, we would have our portfolios and we would, you know, wait to meet and talk to editors. And, you know, Stan Lee just came up behind us and slapped us on the back and asked if we were having a good time. And now he's like the $80 e-ticket, right?
Sure.
So it's and that's no fault of his. It's just that so many people want to meet the guy, and he's become this huge cultural icon. But yeah, when I started, there were very few comic book conventions, and now you can find three or four every weekend around the country. And I'm currently on a like 4 weekends in a row jag of doing conventions. And
so where have you been?
Oh, Niagara Falls, Omaha, and now I'm going to forget the little one before it. But I'm ending with Des Moines, which is the important one.
Nice. So not just seeing the culture change. I mean, it's interesting how much of an investment it now has become to go to one of these conventions. Because
Yeah. You're
not just buying the tickets. But if there are celebrities there that you want to meet, you're going to have to shell out big bucks.
Oh, yeah. It is something you really have to plan for. It's not something you can do on a whim anymore like when I started. And in some ways, you know, there's a little bit of tension for artists when we're there because we're there to sell our wares. I mean, on top of just meeting people and
Right. Autographing
books, we're there to sell art. And a lot of the money gets sucked out of the room by people that are buying those special, you know, special attraction tickets to meet the celebrity. So it's, you know, I'm sure it'll all balance out and we'll find our level eventually. But it's kind of weird judging how you're going to do at a convention these days.
Well, and looking at some of the people who go to these conventions, who are the attractions at these conventions, mm-hmm. I mean, there are many stars that, you know, I remember watching on television or in
Yeah. Movies
that this is all they do.
Right.
Now.
Yeah, that's
their
job.
This is their job,
yeah.
is to go from convention to convention.
Yeah, and it's funny. You get to, you know, it's become this thing where, like, there's this little wee crossover. Like, there's a lot of cartoonists that know a lot of movie stars or TV stars because we're in the same place every weekend, which is kind of neat. But, yeah, it's definitely a different scene than it was when I started.
Well, I want to talk about women. Because there's been a lot of controversy about – there was a recent panel. Was it in Denver?
Yeah, it was Denver.
Right. So there was a panel on women in comics, and there were no women on the
Right. Panel. To their credit, though, they threw together a
Right. Follow-up
one that was all women. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So at the last minute,
Yeah. At
the end of the convention,
they didn't really
organized
give it a lot of
by women who were pretty mad.
Yes, right? Correct.
So I mean, we have there is a little bit of stereotyping, I guess,
Yeah. About
the comic book artist, the comic book mm-hmm. fan, the people who are part of this world. We have this comment from Sarah on Twitter. She says, I'm so happy to hear your geek culture guests being inclusive of new casual movie superhero fans. It wasn't always that way. The concept of the fake geek girl is particularly exclusionary, where female fans are often charged to prove it. Aaron, is that something that you still see happening?
No, not really these days. It is still the, you know, a girl walks into the comic book store and kind of everybody gets a little nervous. But I've got a couple girls here that are bigger geek fans than most of the guys here. So no, I don't think it's as big around here. I do know that a lot of I've talked to a few of them that some of them are a little nervous of being, you know, the geek girl. But once they come into the store and they see a couple of the other girls playing Dice Masters or reading, you know, Deadpool, it all of a sudden becomes very comfortable for them. And then they come into the store two times and they're all of a sudden a regular and they're talking the Hulk better than some of the guys here are. So it's our store. We try to be very inclusive to everyone. But I can see where it is a little daunting for women in the comic book and game industry, just because it's been dominated by guys most of the period.
Right, so. Right. Do you still, would you say that your clientele, can you give me kind of a percentage?
Oh, I would say we're probably 70-30.
All right.
But it's growing. I mean, I've just had two girls come in and sign up for Dice Masters League the other day. So it's always good to see that diversity making its way towards the 50-50 kind of thing.
And Kyle, I'm sure this is something that comes up in academic discussions quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I hear fake geek girl, I want to say, can we just not? But, you know, it's something that is so prominent, or was so prominent. It's getting so much better now that, you know, it's worth discussing. Whenever I was on Iowa Public Radio last year talking about Gamergate, this is one of the things that came up so frequently was the fact that women are much more prominent in all aspects of geek culture. And this is a huge net positive, too, that I continue to see. Now, just because you get a pushback from a very small but vocal minority does not mean that there's not a place for everybody in here. It's a really geek culture. I gravitate towards it because it's an inclusive space.
There has been quite a bit of controversy also recently just about marketing of some of these comic book inspired movies. The fact that the female characters' action figures are not even getting sold. And of course, a lot of girls would love to have Black Widow. And of course, a lot of boys would love to have a Black Widow action figure as well. So on a personal level, I don't understand it. But Phil, I mean, is that something that gets talked about quite a bit? Because I'm sure you see the women fans, you see the girl fans, and yet the larger companies aren't putting the products out
there.
It's
very strange because, like, from a creator's perspective, the proof is there on the ground. You know, when we're at a comic book convention or just when we're interacting with fans on Twitter or on message boards, you can see that women are this, like, tidal wave of new readers coming into comics. I think DC's number two book right now is Harley Quinn, and no one anticipated that. And that's largely due to women who really dig Harley Quinn as cosplayers or just like seeing this, you know, female lead character.
And for people who don't know, tell us a little bit about Harley Quinn.
She was previously the Joker's girlfriend,
okay,
who has become a Batman villain in her own right. And she's a star of the Arkham Asylum video game, sort of. But that's, you know, just one case. We see the net positive that women coming into comics is providing. And it's really frustrating on our part because creators love to create books that have female leads or, you know, children in the lead. And it's tough when the publishers don't back that because they're a little bit skittish about it because it's real money. It's their money.
Right.
So that's why there's not a Black Widow action figure, because Marvel, you know, or the toy company that has the license, you know, is not willing to gamble. They know the boys will buy a Hawkeye toy. You know, they're not quite sure about Black Widow. And it's really frustrating because in comics, we're proving every day that if you make a woman-friendly comic, it'll sell. So we know it's true. And we'd like the movies and the toys to follow suit at some point.
Well, it just seems to me, watching the way that kids play and thinking about all the time I spent with my Star Wars figures, you want all the characters,
don't you? Yeah. I wanted Princess Leia when I was a kid. I wanted all of them. And I think that goes for everybody. I think all that stigma about, oh, you're playing with a girl's toy, you're playing with a boy's toy, that's largely gone, and thank God.
Well, and also just from a fan standpoint, every couple of years somebody says, yes, we're making a Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
But it certainly hasn't happened yet. It's
I know.
Supposed to.
And it's like the biggest mystery. I guess they're using the Batman versus Superman as sort of a soft launch for Wonder Woman. But that's something that really we should be talking about Wonder Woman 3 right now.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about geek culture in Iowa this hour. We'd love to hear from you as well. Join the conversation, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Phil Hester, comic book artist and writer. He lives in North English. Aaron Kroll is the co-owner of OC Games and Comics in Orange City, Iowa. Kyle Moody is assistant professor of communications at Fitchburg State University in Massachusetts. And coming up in just a moment, we'll talk a little bit more about cosplay. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about geek culture in Iowa this hour. With me, Phil Hester, comic book artist and writer who lives in North English, Iowa. He'll be at Wizard World coming up this weekend in Des Moines. Aaron Kroll is the co-owner of OC Games and Comics in Orange City. And Kyle Moody is assistant professor of communications at Fitchburg State University in Massachusetts. He got his PhD from the University of Iowa. And now we're going to talk a little bit about cosplay. And before I introduce our next guests, I'll ask you, Phil.
Yes.
Have you seen this just explode, the number of people attending conventions in costume?
I have a great cosplay story.
Oh, let's hear it. Yeah.
I was going to San Diego probably 10 years ago. And it's a hassle to get in and out of San Diego. So I got in the cab at the airport. And I pull up at the convention center, and there's already just like a line of, you know, sea of humanity around the whole place. And I get out of the cab, and the very first human being I see is someone dressed up as a character I created. I created a character in Green Arrow called Speedy, and that was the first person I saw. But I didn't say anything because how do you not look like a total creep?
Right.
And say,
hey, I made you.
I created you. Yeah. So, but no, it's one of
that
the more.
That must have been a real thrill, though.
Yeah, it was neat. But it's one of the weirdest. I mean, that's not weird. It's one of the coolest things about cons nowadays is seeing like people express their enthusiasm for these characters by dressing up like them. And it's sort of, as a creator, it's a neat way to tell if there's a groundswell behind a character. Because just recently, Marvel made Captain Marvel female. And everyone's like, is that going to work? Because people are used to the male Captain Marvel. But you went to a convention and you saw dozens and dozens of women dressed up like the new Captain Marvel. You're like, oh, yeah, that's going to work. And now they're talking about Captain Marvel movie. So it's kind of a good way to keep your ear to the ground as a creator to see what's working and what's not.
Hopefully that's not stuck in the same place as the Wonder Woman movie.
I don't think it will be. I actually think it has some momentum.
And there is the Supergirl TV series that's coming out, too. I'm sure you'll see plenty of Supergirls. You certainly see them at Halloween, even though that one Supergirl movie was made that one time.
Right.
And it was terrible. All right. That's another topic. But let's introduce our cosplayers here. Jeremy Lester is with us. He is with the cosplay group Justice Corps of Iowa, and he dresses as Superman. Hello, Jeremy.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And give me a little bit of your history with cosplay.
Well, it goes back a couple of years, but more importantly, within the last year, a group of my friends and I decided to get together. We really felt that there was a need in the community for these kind of events, and we wanted to take cosplay kind of up to the next level for us, and so we decided to form a group called the Justice Corps of Iowa, and we try to stick with as much comic book / movie realistic costumes as we can, and then we travel all over the state doing fundraisers, charity events, hospital visits, just anything that we can to just try to give back a little bit and make children smile.
And you only dress as Superman?
Actually, no. I do Superman, and I also do Batman, but Superman is where my heart lies. Phil Hester, for example, we've met many times at many conventions, and I'm sure he knows exactly who I am.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing, Phil? So, but yeah, Superman, he's the guy for me. My heart belongs to him. I've been a long time dedication. I started collecting Superman memorabilia when I was four. It started with a Superpowers action figure where you squeeze his legs and the arms moved, and it's been a lifelong love since.
And how many people are in your group?
There's 10 people now. We just recently got two new members, a Thor and a Red Hood. So we've got a total of 10 members in the group now.
All right, and your wife is also part of this?
Yes, my wife, she does Wonder Woman, and she also does Catwoman. Yeah. And then we have a Flash from the TV show. I mean, the TV show is obviously very popular right now. And we have a Flash that does an authentic TV show replica Flash. Captain America, Black Widow, the Avengers, they're big right now, too.
Why do you think that this has grown so much?
Oh, that's a tough question, but I think a lot of it is, people want to be able to grab a piece of that culture and remember that part of their childhood that they had before, and this is a good way to do that. So now it's actually become an okay thing to be able to dress up as your favorite hero and go to these conventions, and, you know, it's not looked down upon like it would have been 10, 15 years ago, you know, where people would just think, oh, he's a weird person dressing up in a costume, but now it's actually become more socially acceptable and people are getting more comfortable with it. And I think that has a lot to do with it.
Do you feel different when you're dressed as Superman?
I feel like Superman when I'm dressed like Superman. Yeah. I mean, when you put on the suit, it changes your whole persona. I mean, when you walk around in the suit, you know, you're portraying the character. You have to be Superman. I mean, I have to be Superman. I have to stand for everything that he has stood for 77 years, you know, truth, justice, the American way. When kids, adults, everybody looks at you, they're expecting you to be Superman. So you have to portray that and live up to that character, you know.
Wow. All right. Well, I want to bring another guest into the conversation here. Stay with us, Jeremy. Alyssa Kritz is on the line. She is the executive director of Anime Iowa. Hello, Alyssa.
Hello.
And Anime Iowa is a convention in Coralville coming up Friday, July 24th through Sunday, July 26th. And how many years has Anime Iowa been around?
This is going to be our 19th.
All right. And so cosplay is a big part of anime culture as well, right?
Yes, it is. It's a part.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you'd see as far as cosplay goes at Anime Iowa?
It's really diverse. To be perfectly honest, you're going to see just about anything there if you were to go. A lot of anime, there's a lot of anime characters, a lot of manga characters, and you'll see kind of the differences between those. But there's also a lot of comic books showing up, a lot of general culture, pop culture as it is. You'll even see video games and Doctor Who.
Interesting. And with, Jeremy was talking about the Justice Corps, and so some of the main characters that people associate with comic books, some of these are costumes you can buy, but with anime, I mean, people have to get a little more creative, don't they?
Sometimes. You can find a lot of these costumes online, and usually the biggest question is the quality of the costumes. But there are a lot of folks that will actually go to great lengths to make their own costumes, and we have seen some beautiful pieces of work at the convention.
And you have done some cosplay yourself. What do you dress up like?
I've done a little bit. I've never really been an avid cosplayer, but I was into a couple of lesser-known Japanese works, and I cosplayed a couple of characters from my favorites.
And why? What's in it for you? What feels good about that?
It kind of brings that fandom to life for me. When I cosplay, it's a character that I enjoy, maybe not always my favorite, but it's a character that I enjoy, and it kind of brings that fandom to life for me. It brings it into the real world and kind of gives me that little getaway from real life for a couple of days.
Alyssa, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us today.
Thank you.
Alyssa Kritz is Executive Director of Anime Iowa. And Jeremy, I was just asking Alyssa about people making their own costumes. Are the Superman costumes you can purchase, are they good enough for you, or do you have to embellish?
Well, I do a couple of different versions of Superman. My most known would be the Christopher Reeve costume. That is a replica costume. It was made in Argentina by the person that holds the copyright right to the Warner Brothers Studios Christopher Reeve Superman costume.
So what does an authentic replica Christopher Reeve Superman costume run you?
$1,500.
Wow.
And that's not including the boots. The boots had to be special made, which was another $350.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And that's just one of your costumes.
That's one of them. And then I actually do a Man of Steel version that I actually made myself. It took me 3 months, 4 hours a day, 5-6 days a week to create the Man of Steel costume with the puff paint to give it the texture of the suit and everything. It was a long, grueling process.
So do you ever have to say to children, hey, watch the suit?
Actually, no, it holds up pretty well.
Good.
I mean, that was one of the reasons why I used the puff paint was because once it dried, you can touch it, and kids obviously like to touch it, the
right.
arms of it and stuff, because it's puff painted and it's puffy. And so, yeah.
All right, Jeremy, thank you so much for talking with us today.
No problem. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Jeremy Lester of Justice Corps of Iowa. He dresses as Superman, mostly. We also talked to Alyssa Kritz, who's the executive director of Anime Iowa. That conference is coming up in Coralville at the end of July. And we're talking about geek culture in Iowa today. We've got a few people who want to get in on the conversation. Aaron is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What would you like to add to the conversation?
Well, I go to a lot of these shows and a lot of these conventions, and I notice a direct link between the growth of cosplay and the explosion of the cons. And I would say that cosplay is a huge reason for the number and size of these cons to grow. And I know I did a show here in Iowa City. I know Phil knows what I'm talking about because he was there too. It was a miserable, miserable show last year. I doubt 50 attendees showed up for the whole weekend. But the one part of the show that could be considered a success was the cosplay portion, because we had tons of people showing up wanting to cosplay for the show. So I just think that cosplay is a huge reason that the shows have exploded.
Interesting. Do you think that's a good thing?
Oh, yeah. I think it's great. I don't see how it could hurt at all.
Yeah. I think it's when you go to a convention, there's just this sort of culture of there's atmosphere of creativity going on, because you see artists at work and you see writers at work and actors. And like, if you're an attendee, you want to experience that yourself. And I think that's where a lot of the cosplay comes from. People want to express themselves like the artists and writers they admire too.
Right. Well, and I do think there's something about comic book heroes, superheroes, that, I mean, people just want to see their best characteristics
right.
in that hero, and
right.
and then becoming them sort of cements that.
It's true. But Aaron, that doesn't explain all the Jokers.
No. Aaron, thank you so much for your call. And Kyle Moody, I want you to weigh in on that. You said a lot of people have been looking into this, asking academic questions about cosplay. What are some of the areas of research?
A lot of it has to do with gendered cosplay. Much of it has to do with LARPing as a way to deal with other real-life issues. Geek culture in some ways is viewed by many as escapist, fantastic culture, which is great. And one researcher, Dimitri Williams, looked into live-action roleplay of World of Warcraft characters as a way to deal with certain psychological issues. Now, that's certainly not applicable to everybody who does cosplay, and his research was looking at only one very particular subset. But there are elements where people get into this not just because of the creative aspect of it, but also because there are other personal reasons for taking up cosplay.
Such as?
The reasons that Williams listed were that some people were undergoing unfulfilling personal lives and dealing with it through live-action role-play. That's not always specifically the same thing as cosplay, I should also say that. A lot of people that I know who do cosplay do it as a communal celebration, and that's also come about in many more recent journal articles that discuss it too, much like what Phil says, a celebration of communal creativity.
We've talked about the fact that Wizard World is coming up this weekend. And I mean, obviously, Anime Iowa, that's another kind of convention. Several other conventions that have taken place in Iowa have come up. And in the fall, you'll be at the Midwest Con.
Yeah, in November. Right? Yeah. And that's sort of our local homegrown Des Moines convention. Yeah.
Some people criticize Wizard World because it's become this giant thing. And some people call it the Walmart of Comic-Cons. Do you feel like that's damaging the local scene, the homegrown scene?
It really depends on how Wizard behaves in a certain market. In Iowa, it's working out great because Wizard World is so far away from Midwest Con. But in Minneapolis, it's a little bit troublesome because I think they're only separated by a week or 2 weeks between the homegrown Minneapolis club show. We call them club shows if they were founded by like a comic book club.
Okay.
And those are always the best, those sort of not-for-profit homegrown cons. And Wizard World's kind of stepping on them a little bit. So, and that could be down to ignorance, them not knowing when that show is. But I think as long as – if a market can support a Comic-Con, it can probably support two as long as they're on opposite ends of the calendar.
All right. And so you think that maybe in this case, rising tide will raise
hopefully.
All the boats.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, like – the idea of having – well, look, when I was a kid, the idea of having any comic book convention anywhere in Iowa was science fiction. So having two, I'm like, hey.
That's pretty great. Well, we're nearly out of time. Aaron Kroll, I want to say thank you for being here today. Aaron Kroll is co-owner of OC Games and Comics in Orange City. Hi. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
And Kyle Moody, assistant professor of communications at Fitchburg State University in Massachusetts. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you very much for having me.
And before we sign off, Phil, I'm sure a lot of people have followed your work through the years. What are you working on right now? Where can we see your work?
Well, you can always go into any local comic book shop and say, take me to your Phil Hester comics. But what I'm working on right now is a book called The Flash Season Zero, which is a comic book based on the TV show's continuity. And then I also write a book for Image Comics called Mythic.
All right, so The Flash based on the TV series, I mean, that just changes the look for you are you writing it as well or are you drawing
it? Well, I did write one recent chapter, but mostly I'm just drawing it. And it's terrible for me because I tried to draw the classic Flash all the time and my editor always has to say, no, it's the TV one. You can't do that. It needs a zipper here and a seam there. And so I'll probably figure it out by the end of the book how to draw the TV Flash.
And is there something, I mean, we've talked about traveling to all of these cons, which can take a lot of time. I'm sure it could get in the way of actually doing the work you love.
Yeah.
Is that hard?
It is. But I'm a kind of a workaholic, so I tend to bring my work with me on the road. So while my other friends are out partying, I'm in the hotel room drawing pages.
All right.
Editors take note.
All right. I'm sure they're all listening.
Yeah,
Phil.
Right.
We'll get that out there for you. Phil Hester, thank you so much for being here
today.
Thanks
for having me again.
Phil Hester, comic book artist and writer who lives in North English, Iowa. He will be at Wizard World this coming weekend in Des Moines. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.